I would rather take the hit than to have my customer, leave my customer in a position that, you know, left a sour taste in their mouth. Once you figure out who your customer is, who your clientele is, you have to focus on that. We're gonna provide a Mercedes experience, and people pay for that. We perform better at that level.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman, and I am here with Chris Shuri. And Chris, so good to have you on the show.
It's good to be here, Jeff. I always enjoy talking about CEO stuff, so I appreciate you having me on.
Well, this is a good place to do it. So we got an audience that wants to hear CEO stuff, and as you know, specifically, how do we bring access to our listeners into the minds of smart CEOs making tough decisions and navigating pivotal moments? So that's what we're here to talk about today. And you and I had a chance to get together for lunch recently. Enjoy some great Italian deli sandwiches. And,
yeah.
It was fantastic getting to know you better that way.
Yeah. And you even bought lunch. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to make the trip, I might as well buy you lunch, right?
Yeah. That was awesome. It worked out great.
Yeah, it did. Well, I'm excited because, you know, I got to know you more. I've looked at your profile. We've chatted a little before, chatted at lunch. And I think there's like a ton of stuff here that you can share with our audience. And you've got a really, I'm going to call it a really well-rounded background. You know, you've been through a lot of different things. You've had a lot of successes. You've navigated some obstacles. Just to orient our audience though, give them a flavor of a couple of the highlights that you've, you know, places that you've been, things that you've done leading up to today.
Wow, that's a good one. You know, I've been an entrepreneur I did some math the other day, and of the 39 years that I've been adulting and providing for my family, of those 39 years, I've only worked for somebody else directly for 4 of those years. And that was early on. And so I've been fortunate that I built a very successful, I call it a construction company. You know, we were a general contractor. We had a custom cabinet shop. We had an electrical contractor. We provided great services for our community. Had great success doing that, received a few awards for being, you know, an entrepreneur and being somewhat successful, and then lost it all, you know, the economy, the big crash of 2008-2009 really hit my business hard. And then I built again and I got back into a rhythm and started building, started having success and started working on a really great resort development up in Northern Utah. And once again, was sitting on top of things and having great success. And then, you know, made a few bad decisions and had a few little, you know, issues creep up on me that kind of pulled the carpet out for me again. So, and then one more time, you know, built a restaurant, had great success, had fun building a restaurant. You know, that's a tough business. You know, now I'm in a position, I had an exit just recently, was able to sell the restaurants and come out of there with a little bit of cash. And now I'm able to focus on helping others. You know, I love serving others. I've always loved being a mentor and working with other entrepreneurs and business owners and helping them be successful. And now I have the ability, and I'm somewhat blessed with the opportunity to take all these experiences I've learned and share them with others and help them be successful.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're one of the stops on your journey to share this with other people. So it's great to have you here. So when you coach or when you're talking with other entrepreneurs about their experiences, I'm really curious, and we'll just dive right in because, you know, you've had the good, you've had the bad. How do you approach talking with other people about this? Or rather, how do you maybe approach talking to them about them talking about their experiences? It's not easy to say, listen, I had a great run, but man, it didn't end right. Like it didn't go well. Yeah. You know, I have some of those things in my past and I'm like, well, do I really want to talk about them? But that's the nature of the business. That's the nature of business itself is to be, you know, you have some winners, you have some losers, and navigating those conversations, at least to me, seems like they're kind of fundamental. If you can navigate a conversation about a failure you've had, you can pretty much tackle any other topic in business, I think.
Well, you know, that's a good point. You know, you and I had a good conversation the other day about this. You know, some of my failures, I'm not going to call them failures, but you know, some of my issues I've had in business are very public, you know, and you can find anything on the internet nowadays, right? So if someone searches me and reads about me, they're going to read a lot of good, and they're going to read a couple things that weren't good that I've had, you know, challenges with. And so I can't hide it, and I wouldn't want to hide it anyways. So for me, as I'm meeting with entrepreneurs, meeting with people that there may be a potential relationship there, I hit that nail on the head. I share some of my struggles I've had, and I talk about how they were such great learning experiences, and that's actually made me part of who I am, and I think made me better to help other people. And you know, I've had people, I'm not going to lie, I've had people not do business with me because of stuff they've heard or information they've dug up on me. And you know, it is what it is. So what are you going to do about it? There's nothing I can do about it. So I keep plowing ahead. But I also have people that I work with who know very well what my, you know, some of my other past challenges were, and they feel the same way I do. It's a great learning experience. And, you know, plus, as we all know, you know, the court of public opinion is somewhat skewed into the idea that you're guilty and you don't even have the chance to prove your innocence. Like, you know, I had an issue with the SEC that I've worked through, and I've almost have it resolved. But when the SEC releases an initial press release saying, here are the allegations against this guy, well, everyone reads that, and that makes front page. But then, you know, 5 years later, when I get to the end of this and the SEC actually realizes that everything they accused me of was not true, and I was able to prove that, well, where's that news story? You know, that doesn't show
up. Yeah, they don't issue a second press release then, do they?
No, they don't. And even if they did, who wants to read that press release?
Yeah.
You know, nobody. So it's just one of those things. And I look at it and I chalk it up to learning experiences. And, you know, I don't think any entrepreneur goes through life and gets from point A to point B in a straight line. It just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you talk to any entrepreneur, any business owner, anybody that's had any kind of success, and they're going to tell you that it was a road. I mean, there was peaks and there was valleys, and that's just the route to success. And you know, I'm fortunate that I can put those to work to help others as well.
Yeah. No, I often talk about seeing around the corner, right? As a legal advisor, I've helped people with issues that some people only experience those issues once, but I've seen them a lot of times because I've helped multiple people who've each experienced them. With that road analogy, it's kind of the, you know, same way. You peaks and valleys. I've seen over the next ridge. I've seen over it a few times, and you've seen over the next ridge. And sometimes that's a ridge you want to see over so you can go there. Other times it's a ridge you got to see over so you know not to go there, right?
Right. So, right. And Jeff, you're a legal professional, and you know that no matter how good a work you do up front to help people, you know, avoid challenges, avoid lawsuits, avoid legal issues, no matter how good a job you do, there's always somebody that feels like they can argue that, or they have a different opinion, or, you know, it's just amazing how many different issues can come up. No matter how well you think you are prepared for it, things still happen, right? And no matter how well prepared you are, man, you're still going to have to at some point defend yourself. No doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, no, the too many external factors. Well, that feels like we went straight to one end of the pendulum, right? Let's swing to the other end of the pendulum for a second, and I'm sure we'll end up in the middle as we talk. But the other end of the pendulum, you were mentioning to me previously that some of the people that you've employed or mentored along the way, like you've been a really positive influence for some people who've gone on to see some great success. That's, you know, that feels opposed to or very different from, you know, I've been a business owner and I've had my challenges and I've taken my lumps, but there's some rewards along the way too, right?
Yeah. You know, I think we were talking the other day about, there's a couple of fellows that used to work for me that got their start working for me. And, you know, I always felt like, as a business owner, I was really, interested in teaching my employees, more than just how to do the job. And so we talked about you know, self-improvement. We talk about how to run a business. You know, they all watch how I ran our business and how, you know, every business I ever was involved in, especially early on, everything I did was very focused on the customer experience. That was very important to me. And so some of these young guys watched and learned and would talk to me and ask me questions. And one of them in particular, you and I were talking about, you know, he just sold half his business for $250 million. And now he's, which is, you know, he brought in a private equity partner and now they're building it up again and they're going for a $1 billion exit. And when I went to lunch with this guy, you know, who worked for me 20 years ago, you know, he says, Chris, I owe it all to you. And of course I'm like, okay, yeah. You know, you've done
that's very nice of you to say that, right?
But he did. He said, look, I watched you. I saw how you take care of customers. I saw how you ran your business. I saw how you took care of employees. And then, you know, I was a young, you know, business guy, a young electrician trying to figure out my way. And one of the things you taught me was to read books. And you taught me how important it was to keep learning and to go find good books and read them and learn how to be better at what you do. And he said, and I did exactly that. And he just started reading and never stopped reading. And then when I asked him, I said, well, how did you learn about the whole private equity idea? And he said, I read books about it, Chris. I'm serious. You taught me and you challenged me to read books. And I started reading books. And I was flattered, right? I was flattered, like, wow, here's a young guy that actually listened to me, who looked up to me as a mentor. And whatever the few things I was able to teach him or share with him, man, he did it and did it well, right? And so, you know, and I've had there's another young guy who worked for us, a similar idea. He was a heating and air conditioning contractor, and he just had an exit a few years ago where he's retired. I don't know if it was as big as the other one, but he had a really nice exit. And same thing, we went to lunch and he shared with me some of the experience. He shared with me some stories about interactions we had that molded him and guided him into how he wanted to do his business. And it was kind of cool, you know, to hear that. And some of the stories were entertaining. Actually, we laughed. We went to lunch and laughed and we laughed about some of the things that we did, like, if you don't mind me just indulging in one little story.
No, go ahead.
I said, we were talking about something and he said, Chris, I was thinking about our interaction the other day before we came to lunch. And I remembered this one time when I came into your office and you said, hey, we're going to visit a client tomorrow. And can you make it? Because we're going to look at their project. And he said, yeah, I can make it. I'll be there. And I said, you need to cut your hair first. So he's telling me the story. And I'm like, oh, I did that? Right. But he said, yeah. He said, you know, I hadn't cut my hair. I've been working hard. You know, I was grinding. It had been probably 8 weeks, maybe a couple months. Or I guess 8 weeks would be a couple months. So, you know, it was a while since I had a haircut. And I looked a little mangy. And you said, yeah, before we go meet this customer, you're going to cut your hair. And then you explained to me, because I was saying, yeah, I know, it's just hard to get the haircut. And you explained to me, you said, listen, the way I do it is I go and get my haircut and I schedule it. And I do it every 4 weeks. And before I leave my barber appointment, I schedule the next one. And then I do it and I schedule the next one. And he said, Chris, I have not missed a haircut since. I have the same hair, the same barber that I had 20 years ago when you taught me that lesson. And I have not missed a haircut since.
Wow. Is that the lesson you thought you'd be teaching him?
Right. And I'm like, and we just laughed about that because we're like, oh, a haircut, you know, clean shaven. But just one of those things that, you know, I had an impact. It's pretty cool to see the impact that I may have had on some of these young guys who have built successful businesses. And now I get to do that every day. You know, now I get to do that. That's my job, is to do that same thing. And on days when I'm feeling maybe like, man, so I've been beat up a little bit over the years. Well, you know what? You think about the times you actually helped somebody and helped them improve their business, gave them just one little nugget that improved their business, improved their life. And then it's totally worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's fantastic. And I put that into perspective by looking back when I was, you know, what, 22 or something like that. and I was working at an engineering firm, and I had a chance to go visit clients with the owner of the firm. And he said, "Hey, come with me. We're going to go deliver gifts." And I was like, "That sounds great. I'm going to learn so much from this guy." And we went and delivered gifts, but we didn't talk about haircuts. We didn't talk about business. We didn't talk about life. The only thing I remember from that whole trip, and I feel like maybe I didn't know how to leverage the mentorship opportunity or something, because the only thing I remember is we drove past some, you know, some diner dive that he had gone to as a kid, and he told me about picking up on some girl with a wooden leg. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what am I supposed to take away from this? This is really weird. Why do you think it is that maybe you would take the opportunity to teach these people, these employees, these things, whereas, you know, I was with somebody who, and he was a great guy in a lot of ways. I'm not trying to badmouth him at all, but I don't know that we took advantage of mentorship opportunities when we were together.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I always had mentors somewhere along the way. I don't know if it was someone that taught me this idea or if I read it in a book somewhere, but I was taught the importance of having mentors in your life. You know, people that you looked up to, people that were successful, people that were doing things that you wanted to do someday, and associate with them, or even sit down and talk to them and ask them questions and learn from them. And so I learned that early on as a young adult, that idea. And so somehow when I started my own business and I began hiring people and working with other teams around me, I somehow adopted this idea that I wanted to influence the people around me for good, whether they were employees or customers or just, you know, young friends or family or whatever. And so I felt like I wanted to influence them for good. And as far as employees were concerned, I always felt that if I can improve their lives personally, they're going to become better employees. If I can teach them something that makes their life easier, makes their life better, I think they become better employees. And so a lot of times we talked in our team meetings, in our company meetings, we talked about, you know, personal improvement that sometimes had nothing to do with being a contractor or building cabinets or being an electrician. And because I just had this, I don't know where it came from, but I just had this idea that I wanted to help others be better. And so, and that's always been the case. I mean, you can talk to anyone that's worked for me, even in the restaurants, most recently, we'd have a monthly meeting and there was always me talking about or sharing some life hack on how they can improve their life, how they can be happy, you know, what it means to have a positive attitude, what it means to, you know, surround yourself with good people, whatever the topic was. You could talk to anybody and they'll tell you that that was my thing, is I wanted people to be better people. You know, someone told me the other day, we were having this conversation and they talked about their team and how they felt like if they could treat their employees like their employees would, like he wants their employees to treat their customers, then that's good. That's great leadership. Right. And I thought about that. I thought, man, that's kind of what I used to do. And so to hear, you know, these stories come back to me that people actually took something away from that, you know, that's cool. Fantastic. Right? And I was going to say one other thing, man, Jeff, you get me talking, you put a quarter in and watch out. You know, here I go. I used to read a lot of books. I would read books. I mean, I have bookshelves full of books. And I realized that not all of the people in my organization would read a book, a full book, right? So I actually used to make book reports. I would go through, and when I read a book, I'd dog ear pages, I would highlight quotations, I'd highlight paragraphs, and then I would take all those notes and put them into what I call the book report. And then I would hand that book report out to all my people on my team and say, "Hey, read this." And you know, you may not read the 300-page book, but if you read this 8-page summary, you'll get a lot of nuggets out of it. And because I wanted them to at least get something good out of that book, knowing that they probably weren't going to read the whole thing.
This was not a school assignment. You're just making book reports for, as an owner, a business owner. What did these book reports look like?
Well, you know, I would, as I would read the book, I'd highlight, I would dog ear, and then I'd go to my, after I was done with the book, I'd sit in front of my computer and I'd go through that book and just type up all of the highlights, all of the important, all the bullet points that I pulled out of the book. And seriously, it was like an 8-page document, just a Word doc that I'd print and just hand it to them.
Did you add your thoughts? You're like, hey, this is why this is important.
I would just take exactly word for word, the thing out of the book that I read and transferred over.
And so I assume if you had a chance for a conversation with somebody about this book report, then it was easy to explain, oh yeah, this is important in our business because X, Y, Z.
Yeah. Then we could talk about it. Right. Yeah. And it was cool. In fact, I stumbled across some of my book reports the other day and I read some of them and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Go Chris.
That's awesome. Do you have an experience with an employee where that book report like made a difference to them and they, you know, or you altered kind of how the business was running? I mean, I think a lot of business owners do this, right? I've got a stack of books on my desk right here, actually in front of my keyboard. And I've read several this year so far, more than I have in past years. And I am talking to my team about concepts from different books. Like tomorrow we'll be talking about unreasonable hospitality, because I think there are aspects of that apply to, you know, any professional services company, anybody who's giving service, maybe every company in the world, the restaurants that used to run, right? It's a fantastic book. I'm going to talk to my team about that book. I don't have a book report, but you know, maybe there's still time to put one together.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think of any direct correlation to how a book report may have affected somebody, but I will share, I'm a huge fan of Walt Disney and the whole Disney experience, right? And so early on, I read, you know, a lot of books on Walt Disney and Disneyland and how he did the things he did. And you know, he was a pretty fascinating guy. And, you know, it was amazing how he would just sit at the entrance to the park and he'd watch people and just watch them and watch them and study their habits and study their routines. And then he would figure out, okay, for example, you know, when you go to Disneyland, you come into Disneyland, the main gates, and then you know how Disneyland kind of opens, you go around that center island to get into the park, right? Well, he watched and realized that people naturally have a tendency to go to the right as they came in the park. And then as they're leaving, they come out the other side. So if you go to Disneyland, you'll see that all the kiosks on the right-hand side, where people are typically coming in the park, have the things they need that they would want to buy as they're coming in. That's where the strollers are. That's where, the umbrellas are, or the things that they might need as they're coming into the park. And then on the opposite side, what do you got? Those last chance souvenirs, the things they want as they're leaving. And that was something that he just observed people and said, huh, if I put stuff over here that they'd want as they're going in and stuff over here that they'd want as they're going out. So, you know, those were the books that probably had the most impact on my team, because once again, we were very customer service oriented, which as a general contractor just was kind of unheard of still. Right. And sharing those book reports, I could see how those had a real impact on my team. And now, you know, these two fellows I talked about who gave me some credit for their success, you know, part of their success and part of their business model is customer service and how important it is, you know, and you've got electricians walking into houses and putting on booties and putting down floor mats to wipe their feet and wearing, you know, they're dressed well. And those are all things that we learned and talked
Fresh
about.
Fresh haircuts, right?
Fresh, good haircuts. Yeah. In fact, I'll tell you, one of those companies requires almost a missionary haircut from their employees because that's the clean cut, person they want going into somebody's home, and they're all dressed in uniforms. I mean, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, I know those books had an impact. I know those book reports had an impact. And now I bump into people that worked for me 25, 30 years ago, who still, we talk about the book reports. We talk about the stuff we talked about. We talked about these lessons we'd have, and it's cool. It worked. It worked.
That's awesome. It's awesome to be building that legacy all along. I think a lot of people get to the end of their career and like, oh, it's legacy time. But, you know, why not be building the legacy as you go and all the people that you're impacting. That's cool. Do you have a time in your experience, you know, I'm not sure which business it might be in, but across these businesses, you know, what are some of the pivotal moments for you that required you to think hard, but maybe even made you level up how you think? Maybe, you know, approach things from a different mindset or gain a new perspective. Maybe the easy things to go to are always, oh, well, you know, things didn't work out how I wanted, so of course I had to shift my perspective. But that's not always, that's, those aren't always the most impactful on how we make decisions, maybe how we react to things, but maybe not how we make decisions.
Because I, you know, like there's things in my career, for example, here's one, and I'm probably going to go a little bit different direction, but you know, we were, when I was a general contractor, we prided ourselves on doing really great work for people. We, you know, the whole, like I said, the whole experience, the whole customer experience was different. And and we gave an elevated type of service. We provided an elevated service to our customers. So when we built homes, when we did remodeling, when we did cabinets, we really focused on, we probably did a little bit nicer, higher end work for people who were willing to pay for that, that level of service. You know, it's kind of like, if you're going to go, why would you spend, you know, $100,000 on a Mercedes when you can go buy a Toyota for $50,000? Well, there's a lot of things Mercedes have that are worth more money, right? And so when we built our company, all the companies, that was my mindset, is we're going to provide a Mercedes experience and people pay for that. Because sometimes it's not cheap to provide that experience.
Yeah. What did that mean to do a Mercedes experience for you guys? Like, what? How would a customer experience that differently than, say, somebody who was providing the other experience?
Yeah, yeah. So in let's use building a custom home, for example. You know, we built several, many very nice, very high end custom homes, and in a custom home versus like a starter home, it's just everything. The material, quality of materials is better. You know, the quality of the cabinets, the appliances, the countertops, the tile. I mean, everything is just elevated, just costs more money for having a better quality product. And one of the things we would do is, if we were building a custom home, we would have a superintendent, and we have one superintendent on that job, and he only had one job to do, and that was to build that house. Now, that's expensive. For me to have one guy who is on that job every day, all day, not bouncing around between different jobs, that allows him to be involved in every aspect of the project. He sees everything that's going on every day. He knows the job site's clean. He knows the house is being built properly. And the customer can show up anytime during that job, during that day, and they know that our superintendent's going to be there so that they can talk and ask questions and walk around and do whatever. And like I said, that's not cheap. And a lot of contractors can't afford to do that because they're not charging the customer to have that experience. You know, I had a customer call me one time, and he said, Chris, why is my, you know, $75 an hour project manager or superintendent, why is he sweeping? Why don't we have like a $25 an hour laborer sweeping? And I said, well, I could do that. But here's the thing, my superintendent's going to be there no matter what, because his job is to be on your job all day, every day, and make sure everything's right. So if he's standing around waiting for some subcontractors to show up, or he's, you know, doing this or doing that, you know, why not grab a broom and sweep up the job site? You know, now he could call and get a laborer in there to do that, but then now we're charging more. And so that's how we ran those projects. And that just cost more money. But then at the end of the day, I'll tell you what, our customers loved us. They loved the superintendent. I had several customers hire people away from me because they had that relationship. They loved that guy. You know, we built an estate for a family one time that was, you know, in today's dollars, probably a $75 million estate. And you know, there was 13 buildings on 20 acres, you know, a pond, a pool, and, you know, there was a pretty extensive project. Well, yeah, they hired away my superintendent to help just maintain the place, and they gave him a full-time job just to be there And I think he still works for him. This is probably 15, 20 years ago that we finished this project. And I think he still works for him. So that's just how, that was the experience we wanted our customers to have. And that costs more money, and their customers are willing to pay for that.
Was that an easy decision for you to say, hey, we're going to, like, is it just like, it goes with the market that we're targeting, and so we're going to be higher end, so we're just going to do it? Or was it not as easy? Because I know a lot of people, especially if you're in business and you haven't like hit the jackpot right off the bat and you got the money flowing, it's really easy for people to start to say, well, I'll do it when I get money, or I'll, you know, I want to do this when I have more time. And they just never get around to it because, you know, offering quality does take more time and it can be more expensive. So is that something that was just an easy decision? You're like, we're just doing it? Or was it something you had to work through? Was your team on board with it?
When I started my first construction company, you know, I was the guy. It was me and a couple guys. We were doing all the work and we were doing smaller jobs and so forth. And that was just the way I operated. You know, when I started my first construction company, I knew that I was going to bring a level of professionalism that didn't exist in that world. And so that's just how I operated. So when I hired fellas to work for me, they just saw and they just said, okay, well, this is how we do it here. You know, we sweep up every day. You know, my philosophy when we were doing remodel jobs and even new construction is that at the end of the day, a customer could walk through that job site barefoot to see what happened that day, which means if you're going to walk through a job site barefoot, you know, what's that mean? You know, we've got to sweep up, we've got to pick up our tools, we've got to put away everything. And so that was my philosophy. And when people worked for me, they figured it out. And then when it got to the point where we got bigger, where I wasn't the one on the job every day and I had other fellas and other people running jobs, that whole philosophy, that mindset of mine is what I taught and talked about and expected. And that's, you know, if I showed up on a job site at the end of the day and if it wasn't barefoot accessible, they heard about it and we talked about it. And so that was always how I was. And as I built the business, I built it with that same idea of this is how we're going to do it. And so when I would go out and meet with customers and potential customers, I could, you know, I had a way of determining if they were going to be a Toyota customer or a Mercedes customer. And I'm not dismissing the Toyota customer at all. I mean, I'm not doing that. But I just knew that we performed better at on certain types of jobs. Everything we did, the cabinet shop we built very, we called it a furniture company because we built kitchen furniture. I mean, we built nice stuff. And I just knew we performed better at that level. And so to build it, it just took time. But it was also, that was what I wanted to, that's how I wanted my customer to be treated. And those are the customers I wanted to go after. And so everything we did focused on that. And every time we were tempted to do a job that maybe wasn't within our wheelhouse, maybe someone was on a tight budget, maybe someone didn't have the ability to do it. I mean, every time we tried to do that, you know, I usually lost money because I wanted to make sure that our customers always had a great experience. So if I made the mistake of saying, yeah, I'll go build this project for you, not normally how we would do it, not normally within the kind of budget we would like, but we're going to do it. Well, I would still do it right and still make sure they had that experience. And it usually costs me money because I'm not the guy that's going to go to a customer afterwards and say, oh, isn't this great? Don't you love it? Oh, by the way, you owe me more money than we talked about. That's just not how I operated. So I would rather take the hit than to have leave my customer in a position that, you know, left a sour taste in your mouth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I get that. It's hard to lower your bar when you feel like that's the minimum you should be doing to really offer the quality that you want to offer. I think every attorney's done the same thing. They're like, hey, well, can you do this? Yeah, I can do it for you. Now it's like, no, I don't do that. Like you don't want me to do it. You want somebody who's willing to do it the way you want it. And that doesn't work for me to do it.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, I'd have a customer who we're building this beautiful home for, and then their kids would say, hey, Chris, can you build my home too? And I'd say, no, you know, there's contractors that specialize in that. There are builders that know how to build homes on a lower budget. They just know. They're better at it. Their subs are good at it. Their suppliers know. Everyone knows how to do that. And that's just not how we're programmed. And so I would just have to say no. And that's, I think that's an important business lesson too, is once you figure out who your customer is, who your clientele is, you have to focus on that. I think a lot of attorneys are really good at that because, you know, Jeff, you're an attorney and you specialize in a certain area. Well, if someone came to you and said, "Hey, can you help me with my divorce?" Well, you're a lawyer. Why can't you help me with my divorce? Well,
do you want it to go even worse than it's going right now?
Yeah. And you know what your specialty is, and you know, and so you're going to say, "Well, yeah, no, but I know some guys, but no, I'm not your guy. Yeah, I'm a lawyer, but it's different, you know?"
So, yeah, I've had one or two friends come to me. They're like, I've got this problem with the law. And I'm like, you're going to go to jail if you hire me. It's not an area I know.
Yeah.
And I will make a mistake and you'll be in jail. So,
yeah. And there's some great lawyers that totally understand that world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how we were in our business. That's just how we operated. Everything we did, we made sure we knew who our customer was and we targeted that customer. And then once we got them, we did everything we could to make sure that they're well taken care of.
Did this translate over into your restaurant business? Because I've eaten at your restaurant. I didn't know it was yours. I mean, we met well after the fact, but we would go up to Bear Lake. We'd eat at your restaurant every time we were there. Great, great food, great atmosphere. Did this carry over? How did that translate?
So, okay. That's a great question. How was it? First of all, was it okay?
Yeah. I mean, we kept going back. That's like the baseline right there, right? We were like, hey, let's go. And we noticed when it wasn't available, you know, if it was closed or something, we noticed. We're like, oh, we can't go today. So,
yeah. So it did translate because still I wanted to make sure that everyone that walked in that restaurant had an experience. And so we always talk to our servers about, hey, we're trying to provide a special experience for our guests. So make sure you do whatever you can. You take care of them.
Good service, but like the ambiance was set right as you walked in.
Okay. Well, yeah. So part of the experience was coming to a cool place to get a meal. Yeah. And, you know, we had the theme was hot rods and Harleys. You know, we love hot rods. We love Harleys. So if you walked in the front door, right on that wall, right behind the host stand was an old Harley sitting on the wall. And then you walked in the restaurant, we had two hot rods up on lifts. And then you walk further, a little bit deeper, and there's another Harley on the wall. Then all the decor was the vintage, you know, hot rod and vintage Harley, you know, signs that we had everywhere. So, yeah, that was part of the experience is people walk in and go, wow, this is pretty cool. Okay. And that's step number one. You have to have a cool place, in my opinion, to wow people. Then step two is you have to have a great experience. The food has to be good. The food has to be different than what you can get down the street. The service has to be good. The whole experience from the moment you walk in the door until you get your food and finish your food and walk out needs to be elevated. Now, the difference is, you know, I wasn't like a high-end fancy restaurant. We were a pub-style restaurant. I think our food was probably a little bit more expensive than you can get down the street, but not much. So that was also a challenge is you still had to be, you know, you still had to pay close attention to your bottom line and make sure you provided a really great meal, but within reason, because you didn't want to just price yourself out of the market. You know, you could sell a $17 or $18 hamburger, which is reasonable. We did have people complain about our prices. It is what it is.
Yeah. But they could go outside to one of the four hamburger stands and buy a burger and shake out there if they really wanted a cheaper experience. Right.
Yeah, they could. They could. So I think it did translate to that. I really wanted to make sure that everyone that walked in our restaurant had that experience. You know, once again, it was a cool place. The food was great. The service was great. And they left there feeling good about it.
Yeah.
And so, and that's hard. You know, it's very hard in the restaurant business when you have so many different employees, people that sometimes don't come from that ideation, right? They come from a restaurant where it's like, hey, you know, bang it out, get them in, get them out. You know, it's different. There's different types of restaurants. We've all been to different restaurants. We've been to good restaurants. We've been to bad restaurants. We've been to dirty restaurants. We've been to clean restaurants. And so we want to make sure we were cool. We want to make sure people left there going, that was cool.
Yeah. What do you think you did Well, because the two industries we've talked about, you know, construction and restaurants. I mean, I don't want to classify or stereotype, but the employees you've got there, probably some of the issues in each of those businesses carried over, right? And so you're dealing with people who, at least traditionally, they're not blue collar workers necessarily. And I say this, I worked at a gun range when I was growing up, and I'm like, you know, the gun range crowd is different from the law firm crowd in a lot of ways. Like, so it presents its own issues for leadership with different types of employees. What do you think you've done well to kind of get your employees to level up? Cause I've built a few homes, not built for other people, just homes as we've grown as a family. We've built some homes and we've had some great experiences with really, really good people. And we've had some experiences. You're like, man, I can't work with this guy. Like, it's hard to communicate, like, let alone get quality out of him. So what have you done well there to make that work across different, different companies?
So, you know, in the construction company, we always looked to hire good people. Now, if we're lucky, we would find a good person that had experience that knew how to build a house or knew how to remodel. Yeah. And so, but we always looked for good people. And then once again, we were always talking about, you know, how we can do better, how we can take care of the customer. So we were very, we're always talking about that. We were always inspecting job sites. We were making sure they did it right. We were making sure they cleaned up after themselves. And, you know, sometimes you had guys that just couldn't do that. And then, you know, they would kind of self-select out. Yeah. But there's a lot of people that really liked what we were doing and liked working for us because they also wanted to, you know, provide that experience to the homeowner, to the customer. So we'd find those people. Then, you know, because we had to hire in subcontractors and other trades, we established relationships with other subcontractors who also felt the same way about the experience. You know, like one of these guys I was talking about a minute ago, another story he shared with me was one of the things he learned from me was that you clean up your job site every day. And that happened one time when I showed up at the end of the day on a job site and he said, "Hey, Chris, we're almost done. We're gonna come back in the morning. We're gonna wrap up and we'll be done." I said, "Great, that's awesome, thanks." And I said, "Now, what about this mess?" And he's like, "Oh, you know, we'll be back in the morning. So we're just gonna leave our stuff out." And I explained to him, that's just not how we do things. And he was a little bit at first like, "I'm gonna come back in the morning." And I was like, "I don't care." And he cleaned up and he remembered that moment. And so we found guys that wanted to work within those boundaries. And then we were loyal to them. I mean, we rarely would go shopping for a trade contractor because we had guys that we knew wanted to do it the way we wanted to do it. We trusted them to take care of us on price. We weren't going to beat them up on price. We wanted to make sure we were being charged fairly.
Yeah.
But don't take advantage of us, right? And so we surround ourselves with good people. And that's why a lot of these guys are still in business. And that's why a lot of these guys have gone on and built bigger and more successful businesses because they took care of customers the way we did.
Yeah.
So in the construction business, that's how we did it. Now, we had a few tricky guys slip into the process. You know, occasionally we had a homeowner say, "Oh, you know, my nephew is a," oh, we had one that was so bad, so bad, so bad. We had a guy that we let on the job site that we did not want to let on the job site, but the homeowner was adamant that we hire this guy, and it was a disaster. And by the time we got him off the job, there was some serious damage that we had to fix. But we really controlled the whole experience and we learned our lesson that if a homeowner came to us and said, "Hey, we got a sub, man, there's no way." We said, "Nope, not going to do it." I mean, we'll vet them. And if they seem to be a good fit, then we'll give them a shot. But we're just not going to do it that way. Yeah. And so, now with the restaurants, different, not much different, but you just try and hire good people and teach them how to do their job. Once again, there are a lot of really good people that are just good people that work in the restaurant. And we would try and get those, we would try and find those guys and find those gals. And if they didn't want to do their job, you know, it was, we let him go. You know, we had a scorecard. This is pretty funny, but it was a cool process that we created. Every job had checklists of what they had to do when they showed up, what they had to do during their shift, and what they had to do before they left their shift. And we took those scorecards, those checklists, and we turned it into a scoring system that once a week, each employee was inspected on one of the jobs that they were expected to do right. And then I would enter that into a spreadsheet and it would spit out a grade point average. And every week we would post on the wall a report card that showed how everyone was doing in the restaurant and rank against each other based on their grade point average. Wow. And it was pretty cool. It created competition. You know, I remember having, we had a couple cooks one time that, man, their whole goal in life was to beat each other by like, even if it was like 0.01 of a percent, if they could just beat each other, which means, man, they worked really hard to do their job right. And then we had new people who'd come in and be kind of like, what? You're grading me? You're judging me? You're putting a scoreboard up on the wall?
Right.
You know, when they came in and they were down at the bottom of the list and they wanted to know how they could do better, we just go over their checklist, show them where we inspected them, show them where they came up a little short, showed them how to do better, and then they could work their way up the list. And so that was fun. And then in our monthly meeting, we'd recognize people who came out on the top of the list. We'd recognize the cooks who were getting out good quality food on a good time and then doing their side jobs afterwards. And, you know, we'd buy them gifts and buy them candy and, you know, whatever. And so we certainly spent a lot of time acknowledging what people were doing right and highlighting that and then, you know, teaching them. So it was a lot of fun. So I think we were lucky. We had some great people that worked for us, but I think we also inserted people into an environment that motivated them to be great. And it worked out pretty good, but you know, it's not easy, but it worked.
Yeah. Are these the types of things that you're translating over into the coaching side of the business now? Like you're bringing these types of experiences and other things to people who are, you know, looking for how to level up their own business.
So yes, absolutely. I tap into all my experiences and wherever that particular client needs a little help, I help them figure it out and I will offer up and say, hey, this is something we did that worked really good. And if they say, yeah, that's great, then I'll help them implement. And what's cool about doing what I'm doing now is, as I mentioned, I've mentioned this many times, I really like helping other people. I like serving people. And so I can use all that stuff that we did, all that knowledge that we use and the wins and the losses and everything. And I can share that with other people and hopefully, you know, provide those tools to them, to help them be successful.
And what does that look like? You've got your Founders Exchange, right? Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Founders Exchange is a very high disciplined mastermind group that we put together. And when I say high disciplined, I mean, there's rules. For example, confidentiality, you know, when you come into that room, what we talk about in that room stays in that room. Another thing is we avoid conflict. So we don't ever have anyone in the room who is in the same industry as somebody else or can be deemed competition. Mm-hmm. That way, you know, it makes it easier for you to share. We avoid doing business with each other within the group. Once again, helps us create a safe space. Here's one that people find quite interesting, but you're not allowed to give advice. So if somebody comes to the room and says, hey, I'm having an issue with XYZ, you know, we're all smart. We're all business owners. We know everything. We're problem solvers. We're like the master problem solvers. And we'd all, you know, we have the tendency to jump in and say, well, this is what you should do. Here's what you should do. And if I were you, I would do this. We don't do that. Not allowed. So the only thing we do is we think back to experiences we have or have had in our business. And then we share that experience that might be similar to what they're dealing with. And then, you know, they can take away from it what they want. And so the Founders Exchange is a really great opportunity for business owners to come in and have a safe place to share challenges, to learn from other successful entrepreneurs and business owners, and be in a room where they can be a little bit raw, because I think as leaders, as business owners, we put up this wall, you know, we put on this armor to look strong and look like, you know, in front of our team that we're totally in charge of everything. But the reality is sometimes we need to take that armor off and we have to let our guard down and we have to be able to, you know, let some stuff out or learn some things. And so, you know, we provide that safe place for them to do that.
Yeah. That's fantastic. How would somebody find out about that? Get more information, get in touch about the Founders Exchange.
Yeah. I would say go to our website, bootstrapsandbattlescars.com. I mean,
where you've also got your own podcast, right?
We do. We have a podcast. So on the website, you'll have direct access to me. You can contact me directly. There's some more information about the Founders Exchange. If you want to listen to my podcast, it's called Bootstraps and Battle Scars. And I'm actually just interviewing entrepreneurs and hearing their stories. They tell their stories, their bootstrapping stories. They share some battle scars, which are lessons they've learned along the way. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm 12 episodes in, so you know, we're just getting going, but I've had some good chats, and so I think going to the website is a great place. Now, depending on how soon this episode airs, we're right in the middle of building the website, and I should have something. I think I have my just at least a landing page up, but that's where all the information will be.
It'll be around the first of March that we'll launch this. So,
oh yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Well, Chris, it's been fantastic having you on. I really appreciate you coming on, and the time we've spent outside of this recording has been fantastic also. So it's really been a pleasure.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I mean, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and we all like to talk about ourselves. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to do that. And yeah, it's been good to get to know you, and it's cool that we're in the same neck of the woods, so we can do this more often and have lunch.
Definitely. We'll grab some more Italian deli sandwiches someday.
That sounds good to me. Yeah, that was good. And I'll make sure I don't lose my credit card before I come up next time.
Well, if you do, it's not a big deal. Yeah. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining. And to our audience who joined today, thank you to all of you for joining us on the show and listening, gathering insights. If you found this useful, feel free to go and leave us a rating on one of the platforms. And we will see you all again next week. Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.